Cool. We are.
All right. Well, here we are back again.
Hello.
Yeah. Hi.
Welcome.
Thanks. You too. I guess we're here at Hillbrook. So
we are.
I'm the guest.
You are. But we're all guests.
Yeah, it's true.
On the show.
Right.
So welcome. I was talking to them, not to you.
Oh.
But now I feel rude. Welcome, Carla. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Welcome to all of our listeners. It's
yes.
Great to be back for our second episode of...
Heads Down.
Two Thumbs Up.
Yes.
We're getting really good.
We are. We're so good. Let's just call it a day.
All right.
Or...
Hey, I'm Carla Silver. I'm the Executive Director of Leadership and Design.
And my name is Bill Selleck. I am Director of Technology at Hillbrook School.
We're also your hosts for this podcast.
So before we jump into the vitals... Couple people asked, do we watch first? Do we listen to the podcast first? I don't know so far that it's going to matter too much, but if you have to pick one, we'll listen to this now. But moving forward, watch the movie. We'll share what it's going to be. You'll have some homework for like the week before, and then podcast the following Sunday night.
Yeah, we think you'll enjoy that a little bit more because you'll be able to sort of reference the things we're talking about.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know that was necessary for Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah, who hadn't seen that?
Like most people could also probably do most of it from memory.
Probably.
Right.
Yeah. But if you haven't seen Dead Poets Society, definitely at the end of this podcast, go right out and watch it or pause right now.
Yes.
And come back.
We're definitely going to talk about the ending and we'll spoil it.
Yeah.
Shortly, we will spoil it.
Yeah. We cannot be held responsible.
Yes.
If you have not seen a movie we are talking about, you should really see it before we spoil the ending.
Because our goal is to talk about the movie, so we're going to talk about it.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's what we do.
Yeah, maybe we won't spoil sequels. That's fair.
I think that's fair.
That's fair.
I think so,
But too. We will spoil the ending of this movie because we're clearly going to talk about the end of this movie.
Yeah, for sure.
So do you want to start, want to hop in with the vitals?
Sure. Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
So the movie was released in June 1989, which was actually when I graduated from high school.
Thanks. Any memory of that?
You know, I have lots of memories from graduating from high school, but I don't remember seeing this movie at all that summer. And I think there may have been a chance I saw it with friends when I was on Cape Cod late that summer. But I'm surprised because it was such an important movie to me. And yet I don't have any recollection of actually seeing it in the theater. So anyhow, it was 1989. And, you know, it was set at this fictional school called Welton Academy, which was actually based on a school in Nashville, Tennessee, the Montgomery Bell Academy. But it was filmed at St. Andrew's School in Delaware. They originally wanted to film it in Georgia, but it didn't snow in Georgia, and fake snow was a lot more expensive than just filming it on location in a place where it actually snows.
And we get to see some of that snow.
Yeah, we do.
Including an improvised scene at the very end with Ethan Hawke that was not meant to be outside in the snow, and yet it was.
Ah,
we'll talk about that later. Yeah. That's like the very, very end.
For sure. So it was filmed at St. Andrew's School in Delaware, and it was one of the, I think it was actually the first feature film filmed entirely in the state of Delaware.
Well, there we go. It was a first.
Yeah. I mean, I think about Delaware as a place where you may incorporate your company to avoid taxes, but, you know, I don't think of it as a film location, but there you go. The whole movie was filmed in Delaware.
Yeah.
It starred Robin Williams as John Keating, the great, inspiring teacher. And I have to say, the first thing I thought of when I went back and watched this movie was how much I miss Robin Williams.
Yes, same thoughts.
I mean, he was so great in this movie. And of course, it was really his first dramatic role.
Right.
We also saw some great acting from Robert Sean Leonard as student Neil Perry. Of course, he later went on to have a great role in House. Ethan Hawke, of course, this was his breakout role and became quite a famous movie actor as Todd Anderson. Josh Charles, who of course later went on to be in Aaron Sorkin's sort of first pre-West Wing movie, Sports Night, or TV show, Sports Night. And he played Knox Overstreet.
What a name.
I know.
Hi, Knox Overstreet.
I know, these names in this are great. Gail Hansen as Charlie Dalton. And then there were just a slew of other sort of great little portrayals of characters of students and teachers. And we'll maybe talk about those as we go through the movie.
So this was directed by Peter Weir. Do you know him? I had not known of his previous work.
Just Gallipoli and The Mosquito Coast were two that he had done.
Yeah. I know that he went on to direct The Truman Show that I loved, but I had not heard of any of his previous works.
Mm-hmm. It was written by Tom Schulman, and of course he won the Academy Award that year for Best Screenplay.
Congratulations, Tom.
All right, so those are sort of the vitals of the movie.
Synopsis okay. time?
Yeah, why don't you read the synopsis? Great.
This is from IMDb. Painfully shy Todd Anderson has been sent to school where his popular older brother was valedictorian. His roommate, Neil Perry, although exceedingly bright and popular, is very much under the thumb of his overbearing father. The two, along with their other friends, meet Professor Keating, their new English teacher, who tells them of the Dead Poet Society and encourages them to go against the status quo. Each does so in his own way and is changed for life. I feel like we could add some echo on a little bit of that. Should I add that in GarageBand right now? To go against the status quo.
Status quo.
Quo, quo, quo.
Just
quo,
like that.
Quo.
And is changed for life.
Life. Yeah. You know, like it, actually, this particular synopsis, I think, does a great job of not spoiling
yes.
the movie at all. Yeah. So it's true. That's what this is about. And of course, you know, when you think about Dead Poets Society, you really have a lot of really interesting themes that emerge. Well, first of all, this movie was filmed and released in 1989, but it's set in 1959.
Yes.
So we just have to be really clear that when you're picturing this movie in your head, you're really talking about an era right on the brink, a pretty significant change, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Going from 1959, the 50s to the 60s. And that marked a huge paradigm shift for many of us in many different ways, including schools. And so we're looking at a boys' New England boarding school.
And New England boarding schools tend to be a bit stuffier. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say that Welton Academy is on the sort of the one end of a continuum
okay.
of incredibly stuffy, right?
Great.
I mean, these boys are wearing jackets, they're wearing ties. And of course, this whole movie is set in a space where tradition is incredibly important. That
right,
is like
right.
core value, right? And so what we're seeing throughout this whole movie are some themes, I think, first about the basic coming of age story
sure.
of boys with one another as developing friendships and meeting girls, and they're learning and they're beginning to form identity. And so, of course, that's a real huge part of the movie.
And along with that, this would be a good time to point out that the film was shot chronologically, which rarely happens with motion pictures, right? And the idea of that, Peter Weir wanted them to actually develop friendships and have those friendships and bonds with Keating develop over time as the movie developed over time.
Right.
So it's a really authentic way that they got to know each other by the end of the movie.
Right. I think another theme that we see throughout the movie is the sort of hero of John Keating and this relationship with students, but he really becomes this sort of this inspiring teacher for them, but he's incredibly charismatic and really almost develops sort of a cult of personality more than anything.
Yeah.
And sort of the dangers of following that
yes,
when you're a young person.
Absolutely. And we're going to jump into it a bit later, but the idea of being charismatic, but not necessarily like pedagogically interesting
right.
or charismatic.
Right.
Is
right.
pedagogically charismatic a thing? It is now, because he is not.
No, I mean, he's different compared to all the other teachers, but
right.
we certainly wouldn't put John Keating up there as like a progressive educator by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
So he felt a little bit that way there. So those are some of the things that we'll touch on. Of course, there's a lot about parental pressure and about what it means to be a young person on just sort of the verge of transitioning from 1959 to the 60s. And really, you'll see sort of, once again, adults, quite like Ferris Bueller's Day Off, characterized more as foe than friend, with maybe the exception of John Keating.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel like they did that on purpose, where Keating was the only adult that really understood high school boys.
Right.
And nobody else did.
So do we want to start with just sort of a chronological... Okay, I mean, the opening scenes of the movie really sort of set the stage for this whole drama. And once again, it's not a comedy, and Robin Williams is often sort of known for his comedic roles. And he certainly had moments in this movie where he was pretty funny, but this was a serious drama and it starts that way. It starts with sort of this dark building chapel where they're holding their convocation for the beginning of the year and the bagpipes are playing and they're coming in with these big signs with all of the pillars, which are, you know, tradition, honor, discipline, excellence.
Yes. Those bagpipes, by the way, same piece of music as my high school.
That's amazing.
We had bagpipes at Glendora High School, and that's what they played. My memory is it was Scotland the Brave.
So, I mean, that has to be one of the very, very few commonalities between your high school in Southern California and yes. Wellman Academy. Yeah. There couldn't have been much else.
Yeah, where I wore like t-shirt and shorts every single day.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And so
we both had bagpipes.
There you go.
And that is all.
Yeah. So this is, of course, a boarding school. Mm-hmm. So you see the scenes of the boys starting to move into their dorms with their parents. And, you know, they've gone through this very formal convocation where they've been reminded of these pillars by the head of school. And also that 51% of, there were 51 boys who graduated from Welton last year and 75% went on to attend the Ivy Leagues.
Yes, as though that is the only measure of success. But, so this was written in the late 80s, right? Mm-hmm. But 30 years before that, the late 50s, the Ivy League wasn't really a thing yet.
Hmm.
And so people just kind of went with it. Certainly for us, we're now 30 years since the movie was made and 30 years before it was set. For us, we're just like, oh yeah, of course, Ivy League. But the Ivy League wasn't really a thing in 59.
Ah, interesting.
You know, oops.
Yeah, I know. That happens sometimes. So, of course, that's sort of where it begins. And, of course, you learn that John Keating has returned to teach at his alma mater. He was actually a graduate of Welton Academy, and he's come back to teach the boys, replacing probably some retired dinosaur.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, of course, the other thing that you really learn is the parental pressure.
Yes.
That these boys are under. I mean, right away, Neil Perry's father says, you know, really, you're doing too much. We need to make sure you focus on your homework. You got to do this for your mother. She really cares about this. Like, you gotta knock it out of the ballpark this year.
And the first line of the movie, I'm going to start paying attention to these very first lines.
Oh, that's good.
Do you know the first thing that we heard? Not nearly as hardcore, but definitely sets the tone for parents.
Now remember, keep your shoulders back.
So just like a nervous mother, like, posture in the kid. And it's like, oh, got it. So that's what normal is.
Right. So you get a sense that there's a lot of high stakes at this boarding school.
Absolutely. I also think that part of those high stakednesses is that it's going to tee up Keating to be that square peg in the round hole.
Right. So we get, of course, you cut after this scene at the chapel to the boys in their natural habitat, hanging out in their dorm rooms, where, of course, they have sort of renamed the four pillars.
Let's hear them.
Okay, you ready? Travesty, horror, decadence, excrement. Right? And so they've really changed it.
Yeah. I would like to think that the Hilbert core values, be kind, be curious, take risks, be your best, are the only ones that people repeat.
Yeah. I hope the kids aren't sort of making up new ones.
Yeah. I mean, right. Recently, even at our open house, we had some high school seniors come back and I think I counted five times they used our core values in their speeches. And it was not, they did not mention excrement.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually Robin Williams mentions it again later on in the movie. When they're reading out of the introduction to the poetry book,
uh-huh.
He says excrement.
Oh,
yeah.
I wonder. Did he know?
I'm sure. I'm sure those things have just gone down from one generation to the next.
Yeah. Do you think that's those four fake core values, the anti-core values, were actually back when he was in school?
I'm sure. I don't think much changes from year to year at
sure.
this school. It strikes me that there's actually two cultures. There's sort of the adult culture, the formal culture, and then there's the subversive student subculture, for
right,
sure.
Right, right.
Yeah. So you see them together, and they're having a great time, and they're smoking cigarettes. It's already clear that they're boys at a boarding school, and they're going to figure out a way how to break the rules.
Yes. Can we just talk about the cigarettes for a moment?
Yeah.
Every time an adult walks in, they like stomp it out and, and just go like wave, wave, wave of the hand. Does nobody know that like cigarette smoke stays in a room for like hours.
I know. I never understand.
How is that? Is that just the movie magic of like, oh, I don't see any cigarettes?
Oh, well, I don't know. And I also wonder, I don't know, would Dad have cared that much? I mean, my guess is everyone smoked back in the day. So was it all that big a deal to be a kid who smoked? Yeah. I don't know. Who knows? I think Neil's dad is just much more concerned with making sure that he does well in school. So that's the big thing. So, of course, Keating comes in and he just brings a complete air of warmth to this otherwise really formal climate at Welton. You know, he's the only, you know, fun and warm body in this whole place.
Yeah. And he walks in, walks immediately out, and he's like, you gonna follow me? And where do they go?
To the hallway.
To the hallway.
Right. This is the first class they have with him.
Yeah. And that part, I was so ready to be inspired. I haven't watched this movie in a while. It's been 10, 15, 20 years. It's been a while. And I was like, all right, here it comes. And he just like whispers in kind of a creepy way.
Carpe diem.
Did you hear that?
Carpe diem.
And then all the boys, who are these guys that like smoke and sneak out, are suddenly just like super well behaved. Like, oh, yes, yes, let me lean in. Like, why are they leaning in? Do they not know that it's Keating?
Well, you know, I think there's a couple things I like about that scene. I can totally see what you're saying. But what I do like about that scene is that he is having them look back on these photos of other students who have come before them and reminding them that all of these people are now 6 feet under, they're dead, everyone's mortal, and reminding them of their own mortality and trying to say, you know, hey, live a little, you know, carpe diem.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get it. I get it. And the scene works, but I think that you have to really suspend some judgment to think that this whole group of high school boys wouldn't be goofing off looking at the pictures.
Well, you know, I've talked to a lot of people about this movie, and a lot of people have said, you know, I really wanted to be a John Keating. Like, I just thought that I would go into the classroom and I would be able to stand on desks and inspire boys. And what I realized was, actually, you can't do that to high school students. They will totally take advantage of you.
Yes.
And it becomes a total classroom management debacle. But I actually think that in this particular environment, this was so out of context. It was so shocking. I don't think these boys even really knew how to misbehave in class at all because they had been so trained to just toe the line.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know. It's believable for me that in this particular case, they were probably shocked into submission.
Well, I'll tell you something shocking. You ready for this little story?
Yeah.
So one of my friends, Brent, he and I were in a punk rock band back in the day.
You were?
We were. That's for another story for another day. But he started subbing, and I think he had 1 or 2 days of substitute teaching. And it was that same idea, like, I'm going to be the teacher I wanted. So he goes in, and it's high school, and, you know, he's like, hey, how's it going? You know, my name's Brent. And they're like, what do we call you? And he's like, Brent. Immediately, like, three hands go up. They're like, can I go to the bathroom? He's like, yeah. I mean, like, if you need to go to the bathroom, just go ahead.
Oh.
The kid goes, like, never comes back. And then he's, you know, kind of going through the lesson, writing a thing on the board. And then, like, he sees, like, a shadow on the wall kind of flash and a shadow flash and a shadow flash. And he looks behind them and he sees two high school kids with a paperclip. And they're shocking themselves in the electric outlet.
Right.
Just because no adult was telling them not to do that.
Right.
Right. So within 5 minutes, you know, kids are just
totally
leaving the
devolving.
Classroom, are like beginning to electrocute themselves, you know, in a way. So I don't know.
Okay.
I hear you, but I don't know.
All right. Well, I will say that the boys themselves found it extremely bizarre, right?
Yes. No, that I am with you on.
I mean, one kid goes,
that was weird, but different.
And then Cameron, who's sort of the stick in the mud of the entire group, says, think he'll test us on any of that? I mean, perfect line, which just goes to show that, you know, these boys are just enculturated in the system.
Can we hop in and talk about back to the classroom?
Yeah, let's do it.
So they go to the hallway. They see the people. Carpe diem.
Carpe diem.
And then they come back in. He's like, all right, let's read and rip out some pages.
Yeah.
And that I could believe. Like, rip out the page. They're like, you want me to do what?
Yeah, exactly. And of course, they're ripping out the pages of this book, Understanding Poetry, by J. Evans Pritchard, which just once again is like perfect, right?
Yes.
This is the guy who writes this textbook. And he gets really upset about this this opening introduction to poetry.
Yeah.
He says,
"We're not laying pipe. We're talking about poetry."
As they're ripping out the text.
Yes. Yeah. And I love the graph. The part I had completely bought is that the students like get their rulers out and like copying the graph as he's doing the graph. And he's basically saying like, this is crap.
Right. Right.
Rip out the page. But before that, like they have their graphs and then they rip it out.
Yeah.
"We don't read and write poetry because it's cute. We read and write poetry because we are members of the human race. And the human race is filled with passion."
And that's where we get my favorite line.
"No matter what anybody tells you, words and ideas can change the world."
Yeah. So he's out there saying, let's seize the day, boys, and let's leverage our humanity and be human here together, which is a really different feeling than, of course, they've experienced in the past. And at Welton, sort of, it's like the anti-Welton.
Yeah, absolutely. Then they find the yearbook, the annual.
Ah, yes.
Right? And they find Keating. This was actually Robin Williams' high school senior portrait.
Right.
It was the actual one that we see in the movie. And they see the Dead Poets Society. And they're basically like, what? Yes. What is that?
Yes. And of course, he has been teaching them some Walt Whitman and the poem, "O Captain, My Captain." And so they run after him. And of course, they've already bought into him. Mm-hmm. So they're already starting to call him Captain, right? So they come after him and they want to learn about the Dead Poets Society.
But then immediately after, they're like, you know what we should do? What? We should go sneak into a cave, the same cave, and read poetry to each other. What?
Yeah.
Did you buy that? I did not buy that.
I don't know. I have a feeling that you and I really have different feelings about this movie, just a little bit.
I think that I had different feelings from how I thought. I was expecting to just fall in love with it all over again. And was just like, what? It felt like a very like 80s contrived sort of movie.
Okay. Well, let's just stop for a second because really, in reality, like I had a lot of warm and sentimental feelings about this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I have to say that when you go back and read the criticism of this movie, it was not universally loved in any way, shape, or form. I mean, Roger Ebert basically panned it. I mean, he thought it was just a contrived movie. The Washington Post just took it down. And so I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong. I think there's a lot of this movie that has a lot of platitudes. And when you actually get down to it, there was a really interesting article, and we will share this article in our show notes. But there was an article written in 2014 by a professor at Pomona College named Kevin Detmar, and he basically just tore into this movie. I mean, he felt that it was not only just not well done, but that the teaching of poetry and the whole poetry experience of these boys was just wrong. Badly taught, that Keating had never even read Robert Frost in the first place. And clearly he missed that this was a moment where if you're gonna teach kids to carpe diem, to like not read Walt Whitman and Robert Frost, but maybe like beat poets and poets of color and other sort of modern poetry.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder how much of it, if I had gone through the whole movie watching it and gone, huh, that's different than I remembered. But you actually watched the movie before me. And on our shared Google Doc, I saw that quote. And so going into it, like I was going to say like 98% that I would love this movie. And then I read that and went, huh. And as I watched it, I very quickly went to the, huh, this actually isn't as magical of a teacher that I remember it being.
Right, right. Well, we did have a chance to talk with Joe Romano, who is a member of the faculty and staff at Charles Wright Academy in Tacoma, Washington. And Joe is actually a poet and actually studied poetry. And so we'll hear a little bit about some of his thoughts of this movie in just a second. I'm Carla Silver, and I'm sitting here with Joe Romano. And Joe, remind me exactly of your title.
Yeah, I am the Director of Design and Innovation Labs here at Charles Wright Academy in Tacoma, Washington.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that that degree in poetry is really serving you well in that job.
I would say yes. Like, I think about it and use my, like, my background in poetics in a lot of different ways. I view, like, the game of poetry, not even the game, the art form of poetry as a technological practice. It's just the technology of language.
Oh my goodness.
I'm in this space where I get to use other building materials, but I'm still using language as a material as well.
The reason I brought you on to this is because, of course, we're talking about Dead Poets Society this month, and, you know, you're probably one of the few people that I know and love who actually studied poetry, like, for real, full time. Yeah. So, what's your degree in?
I have a master's degree in creative writing, in poetry. So I have two degrees. I went to the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and I got my BA in English. And while I was there, I quickly started associating myself with some of the poets who are on campus, both in terms of professors and some of the students as well. And I had no idea, first of all, why I was at university in a lot of ways. Now that I think back, like, it was just something I was supposed to do. And I knew I wanted to do something that was, like, creative, that sort of, like, a creative output. And I landed in this place where I felt really comfortable in an English department. I felt even more comfortable using language as a creative output. And while I was at UMass, I learned about this just graduate world of creative writing. I was kind of lost on campus until I found that direction. And I was like, okay, like, now that I know what a next step could be, I'm going to pursue this at the next level. So I ended up going to get my master's in creative writing at the University of California, Davis, where I spent 2 years as a student and then 6 years there teaching English both at UC Davis and at Sacramento City College.
Cool.
I was a teaching artist for a few years in the city of Sacramento, just going into schools and community centers, working with students on creating poems or creating other creative language pieces.
Tell me, honestly, did the movie Dead Poets Society have any influence on your desire to become a poet or an English teacher?
I think so. Like, when I think back to the film, right? When I think back to, like, Dead Poets Society is one of those films for me that I have distinct memories of where and when I was watching it. I grew up in New England, which is kind of, I mean, the film is set in Vermont. I grew up in Western Massachusetts, and I actually remember the fall day. It wasn't the first time I had seen it, but it's the first time that it really gripped me. I was, like, in a back room. It must have been early high school, maybe 9th or 10th grade, and it was just on. And, like, the sun was setting, and, like, the New England landscape, and, you know, you always have these, like, in the film, there's all these, like, brooding images of the landscape, or just, it's like the environment in the early fall at the school. And so I just have very, like, a very tactile memory of watching that film. In terms of, like, at that point, I guess at that point in my life, I was starting to just play with language and poems. I can't necessarily say, like, that was the thing. Like, John Keating was the guy who inspired me. But it certainly told, like, in my thinking about my life in schools, like, it taught me, like, there's a few people in my life who taught me that you could break rules in schools. And I would say that I can name teachers who I actually had. Keating was one of those individuals who taught people that they could break rules in school. And so I imagine, like, that had a huge influence on me. And I put him in sort of like a constellation of stars. People have done that.
Yeah, did you have sort of a real life Mr. Keating in your whether it was an English teacher or someone else, but just in your educational experience?
Yeah, totally. And he was a geometry teacher of all things. Where, like, I don't even know where he came from. One day at my high school, I went to a public school in Western Mass, and one day when I was a 9th or 10th grader, I guess it was in the fall, he just arrived. His name was Shashi Ramakrishna. And he rolls in. He was a man of Indian descent with long black hair, wore tie-dyed shirts and cutoff shorts to school every single day throughout the winter. And I remember the first day of my geometry class, he just gets up and stands up on a table. Funnily enough,
that's what they do. They stand up on tables, apparently.
Clearly, there's a whole pedagogy around this. right, and he gets up and he draws a point on the wall, like, not even on the blackboard. And then he goes to another side of the room, draws another point on the wall, and was like, I've created this line in the air. And I was like, whoa, like everyone writes on blackboards here. Everyone like wears slacks. And like, he was a really influential teacher for me. And he like, he spent 2 years at the high school, said that he flipped a coin about whether he would stay or go and decided to leave to work at a friend's school up in Maine. And so just like, just in a lot of ways, like Keating, like the impact was like very potent, but very brief.
Yeah. Okay. So what now, either looking back on it or when you actually look at the classroom pedagogy or the classroom practices, especially around teaching poetry, is there anything in there that is like particularly either disturbing or just wrong?
If you're cutting the rules of quantifying a poem out of the book, and those rules are made by the editor of the book, you're still reading the poems that editor selected.
Hmm.
Right? Like, you're still reading that editor's value of what should be collected and anthologized. And so perhaps the canonical approach to those poetics, the poetics that Keating presents, is maybe more traditional. Even though the poems that he's having them read come from a tradition of experimentation, like Whitman is an incredibly progressive voice in the canon or in American poetics, but he's still like the traditional choice. So you're kind of encouraging, like, It's 1959, these kids are in Vermont, they're at this boarding school, and you're reading poems that are 100 years old.
Right, like he isn't bringing in like the beat poets or anything like that.
Right, yeah, and you're at that time. Yeah, we're at the brink of the New York School, abstract expressionism. Never mind post-war, like, yeah, I mean, it is post-war. Never mind the 20s, like the huge avant-garde movements all over Europe that are really like, making things happen. Like, let's like pull language all the way out of coherence from the sentence. Like, let's liberate the word from the confines of the meaning of the sentence.
So Keating's kind of like kind of disruptive, but in sort of like the perfect way for Welton Academy, you know?
Yeah, it's like a safe disruption, even though it ends up being like, it goes into unsafe spaces, perhaps.
I totally love this. So I just want to end by asking a really, really important question, which is, okay, we've now talked about Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and now our second episode is Dead Poets Society. What's a movie about school that you would love to hear us talk about?
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I consider it, and I don't know the whole slew of films, I consider it to be the most preeminent fictional film about project-based learning in the world.
Well, I just have to say, we may have to have you back when we talk about Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen that. So now I'm going to watch that movie with that lens. I remember it's really studying history and going back and visiting fiction, fit moments in time, but now I'm going to really look at it through a project-based learning lens.
Well, these two dudes who are failing a class are given one last shot to graduate from San Dimas High School. They have to give a presentation that shows a summative understanding of their history class.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, this has been awesome.
Thank you, girl.
And of course, I always enjoy talking to you about just about anything. So thanks for chiming in. All right, so should we go back to the sort of where the chronology?
Yeah, absolutely. So they go to the cave?
Yeah. So the cave scenes really are a little weird, right?
Yeah. They are. Is that maybe just, is it fair just that I need to suspend judgment and just say, you know what, like, this is actually kind of cool. These high school boys are like smoking and reading poetry.
I mean, what else are they going to do at Welton? I mean, there's not a whole lot that enables them to break out of kind of the... So to them, I think this is pretty, pretty edgy.
Reading poetry in a cave?
They're boarding school boys, right?
I suppose. You know, like when Keating says, hey, let's get out of the classroom, they're like, what?
Yeah.
Maybe they are just so like ingrained with you have to behave exactly this way.
Yeah.
Maybe going to a cave to read poetry is about as edgy as they get.
Yeah, I think it is.
But also smoking, which I actually felt was much edgier than both sneaking out and reading poetry in a cave.
Yeah, but you know, keep in mind too that each of these boys really is finding some way to kind of push the boundaries, right? We're starting to see that. So we see Knox Overstreet pursuing a girl passionately, right? He falls in love. He goes to dinner at his parents' friend's house, the Danberries.
Yes.
And meets the girlfriend of Chet Danbury.
What a name.
I know, once again.
I think we need to add voices. Anytime we see Knox Overstreet, I'm going to just interrupt you and go, Knox Overstreet.
Yes.
Well, and Chet Danbury needs his own Chet Danbury here.
Yeah. So Josh Charles, he just plays this adorable character.
Yes.
Love struck. And he's realizing that poetry is also tapping into his sort of love struck personality. So he's finding his way.
Yes.
And then, of course, most importantly, we see Neil Perry beginning to discover what he really loves.
Yeah.
Which is acting.
Yeah. And it feels like he's enjoyed acting for a while, but suddenly this idea of poetry and like seizing the day, all of these things are coming together.
Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, of course, his father is dead set against him acting, which is, of course, where the plot really thickens for this play, for this movie.
And do you remember when they start the cave meeting?
I hereby reconvene the Dead Poets Society.
That's it. That's great.
That's great. Yeah. It's like so they're cool. Bringing it back.
They are. Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
And you almost wonder how long has the Dead Poets Society been around? Yeah. I wonder if it was around when, you know, the class of 1919, of the pictures they're looking at with Keating.
Yeah.
It's been around forever.
Did you catch when they got back to their class or back to their beds?
No.
Or is it 2 a.m.? So among other reasons, I have 3 small children, so I watch everything on subtitles.
Right.
I don't want to wake them up. But it gives you some notes sometimes. So every once in a while, the subtitling will be different than what they say.
Yeah.
But it also, like, it had a little music note and said, clock chimes twice or clock hits 2 a.m. So you get some clues.
Yeah. Well, you really do see, in general, these boys, their relationships forming, their relationships with each other, with Keating. You get that scene, that iconic scene where they carry him off the field and it's like the Handel's Royal Fireworks or something is going on with that. And it's just this beautiful scene of the autumn, and it's hard to not at least some level get swept up in some of that.
Yeah, no,
right?
Absolutely.
Even Kevin Detmar got swept up in some of that.
Yes.
Even though he hated the movie.
Yeah.
So you start to see these boys, they're testing boundaries, they're testing the status quo, and of course, you know, that's sort of the I would say the peak before you start to see some of the tragic things unfold.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is where we start, or where I started to see kind of the little, you know, chinks in the armor of Keating when they're back in class. And he has that whole thing of like, language was developed for one endeavor. And then he asks 3 different kids and he super mocks them.
Oh.
Did you catch? He's like, wrong, try again. He's like, oh, wrong, you suck. How about you? Wrong, oh, nope. You're super lame too. Did everybody notice that I insulted these 3 kids? And I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, nobody's going to raise their hand and genuinely try and engage.
Huh.
Did you catch that?
Well,
I super winced at that.
You know, it's interesting. I wonder too, because of course, 15% of Robin Williams' lines in this movie are improvised.
Really? 15?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, and he's such a great improviser, right? And you can see there's just these moments in the movie where Robin Williams comes out when he's delivering Shakespeare and all of the imitations of, you know, all the famous actors, Cary Grant and John Wayne, you know, he's doing Shakespeare in all these different voices. I mean, that's so Robin Williams, right?
Yes,
but I wonder if that was one of those moments where he sort of was improvising and
they didn't have like the consulting educators like, actually,
don't do that.
Let's talk about social emotional learning. That's not just... Ixnay,
I don't think there was such a thing as social emotional learning in 1959.
Yeah,
this was a time when people, you know, beat their students with paddles, which does happen, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe he didn't care about insulting them.
I don't think so. Yeah. But what does he say that poetry is for? Do you remember?
To communicate?
No.
To woo women.
To communicate? No. To woo women.
To woo women, which of course Knox Overstreet is doing. And we then see, of course, girls coming to the cave, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So of course, so this is though, of course, when things start to turn especially dark for Neil Perry. And we actually see that, you know, there are consequences to bucking the status quo. And Neil wants to be in this play. He signs up for it. He gets cast. He lies to his father. He actually writes a fake note by his father to the school.
He does.
Yeah. And, you know, he pursues his play. And when his father finds out, he's enraged. Yeah. And he comes and he says, you can't be in this play. It's the night before the play. And Neil goes to Keating.
Yeah. That scene might have been my favorite. It didn't feel as iconic, certainly not as memorable, but actually having the two of them just hang out, talk to each other and say, like, this matters. You know, these people are counting on me. What do I do? And I had not realized quite yet that he is actually the lead. And from what I saw, the way they edited the movie, the play within the movie, was like 90% him. Mm-hmm. So had he not been there, the play might not have gone on.
Right. Yeah. Now, of course, Keating doesn't tell him to lie to his father.
Right.
He actually tells him to have a conversation with him.
Yeah.
And Neil comes back and reports that his father has given him the green light and that he is going to encourage him to act. And of course, that's not true at all.
Right.
And when the father sees him, it's a really sad moment.
So do you think that he actually did talk to his father?
No.
You think he lied to Keating?
Absolutely. Yeah.
How did his father find out about it then?
I just think his father went to the play and knew.
His father knew somehow?
I think so.
I wonder actually if, I don't know, I could see it kind of a few different ways. My guess of what happened is that he actually did talk with his dad. I'm guessing his dad said no. He told Keating, dad said yes, and went anyway. His dad said no, and his dad was like, I'm still going to go to this play because I don't trust my son.
It could be. Could be. Regardless, you know, he catches wind that his son's in the play, and he goes, and then he pulls him. And he takes him home and says, you are being withdrawn from Welton.
Enrolling you in Brayton Military School.
And that is final. That's the word, right?
Yeah, that was heartbreaking to watch.
Yeah. And of course, we end up seeing the tragic death of Neil Perry.
I had forgotten actually that happened. Mm-hmm. I was not prepared for the suicide.
Mm. So yeah, I remember being really shocked when I saw this movie.
Yeah.
That actually happened.
Yeah.
The boys, of course, are distraught.
Yes.
And there's this scene when Ethan Hawke runs out in the snow and gets sick. And
yeah, that's the scene that was improvised outside. So the scene was written to be indoors, but the snow was falling perfectly. So they actually said, hang on, let's run outside, shoot this in the snow. The snow was only out for like 10 minutes. So they ran, shot it. The snow stopped. So they only got one take. Mm. And he nailed it in one take.
That was pretty great.
That Ethan Hawke went on to do some good things.
Yeah, it was a powerful scene.
Yeah.
Of course, the boys come back. The Perrys ask for the school to do an investigation of the death of Neil. And Cameron rats out Keating and says, you know, it's this guy. He's been encouraging us to seize the day and read poetry in caves and all this bad stuff. And he tells the boys, you better confess to this too. Save yourselves. And of course, at that moment, Charlie Dalton, or at that point, now known as Nwanda.
You think, didn't you, Cameron?
Punches Cameron and gets expelled.
He does.
The other boys cave. They can't face their parents.
Yeah.
You know, once again, this parental pressure. And then, of course, John Keating is fired.
Right. And then we see him one last time in the classroom. He comes out. And this is for sure the emotional like peak of the movie. Towards the very end, he grabs his personal items. And then which character came out? Was it Josh Charles' character?
Yeah.
Knox Overstreet?
Yeah, Knox.
Yeah. Stands up, says...
Mr. Keating, they made everybody sign it.
And then stands on his desk.
No, it's Ethan Hawke who stands on his desk.
Oh, Ethan Hawke stands on his desk.
Yeah, and it's interesting because that is actually the only time, the first time in that whole movie that you see a breakthrough in that character of Todd.
Hmm.
Before that, he has been meek. He's been sort of the one last boy to really stretch. You know, Keating's been really working on him to do something, to take a stand on something. You know, there's the whole scene about I sound my barbaric yelp.
Now, Todd, I would like you to give us a demonstration of a barbaric yelp.
Yes, the yop.
Oh, he's just trying to get Todd to do anything, but he's so painfully shy and he's so like just meek as can be. And finally, you know, at the very end, he's the character who stands on the desk and says,
"Oh, captain, my captain."
And they all follow. Not all of them, actually.
Right. I was surprised. I really was expecting them to cut to that reverse shot and seeing every single boy. Nope.
No.
It's like 8 or 10, maybe.
Yeah. And so they stand on the desk and he just says, thank you, boys. And that's where it ends.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a movie that lives sort of legendary in many people's lives. And there's a strong nostalgia around this movie for a lot of people. Yeah. So, you know, is this art imitating life, imitating art, or life imitating, you know, what is this for you?
Yeah, no, I wonder how much of this is actually rooted in what people, certainly in America, think that education is and what a good education mm-hmm. looks like, or what like a fancy, you know, education gets you. It certainly names it, but I think it's also implicit. It really names like, hey, tradition and like going on to the next thing. So for them, mm-hmm. college, and then, you know, for Neil, going on to med school, the next rung of the educational ladder is the goal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about actually having a student that you know, can engage and make a difference in the world.
Yeah, I think there's this like one line where he's like,
prepare them for college and the rest will take care of itself.
And that really did feel like that was sort of the message to a certain extent, or what we are left to think that school should do.
Yes. Yeah. And even though I would agree that that's what that school did, it felt like most people would have that be the takeaway of this is what good school does.
Right. In some ways, it was such a contrast to the high school and Ferris Bueller's Day Off,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, you went from sort of this kind of no real rules, but sort of traditional learning to this very sort of stuffy prep school. And I feel like it was all the stereotypes of sort of private elite schools that, you know, I think today you certainly don't see. I mean, you see some schools like that, but there are a lot of schools that are private high schools that are far from Welton Academy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will say that I watched this movie with my child a couple weeks ago. I have a 9th grader who's actually at a boarding school. And while it's a co-ed boarding school, I asked him afterwards, well, how true does this feel to your experience in boarding school? And the one thing he did say was that he did see a real parallel between his relationships with his friends on his hall. He really has connected with them and has fun with them and sees them really as a small family.
Sure.
And then also this living alongside your teachers, he feels that that was a pretty authentic portrayal of the relationships you do form with your teachers in a boarding school, at least the one with Keating, where you're like, you're friends, you're living together, you have access to them, and you form these deep relationships with them.
Yeah, absolutely. Remember when Neil Perry went to go see John Keating and went to his kind of dormitory, and he was like, man, this is a small place.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, what about the rewind?
I think it would actually make Keating progressive, period. Not just charismatic with traditional pedagogy, but charismatic, and actually would bring more into their world to actually get them to go, you know what, like acting, yes, all in. I don't know that they would have gone mm-hmm. all in on acting mm-hmm. if it was just, and let's continue reading from the hymnal, mm-hmm. you know, same exact book. Mm-hmm. Feels like that would have been an easy shift that would have made, well, certainly for educators, right? Keating, I think, just more charismatic and like, wow, this guy really was like the real thing, instead of being, wow, he makes them stand on desks and takes them in hallways and then quotes Whitman and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think I would have picked some different literature for the boys to really pursue and study that might have been a little bit more, I don't know, less traditional, push their thinking a little bit more. But you know, one more thing about the film. I mean, it is, and we talked about this with Ferris Bueller's Day Off too, it is white. It is white as that snowy Vermont scene, and it is pretty much womenless, with the exception of mothers who are all portrayed as sort of these like stay at home, you know, women who just sit around and smoke cigarettes, and then these few sort of female character love interests. So mm-hmm. it's white and it's very male centric. So yeah, I do want to say one more thing that we should definitely put on our show notes, by the way. Saturday Night Live did this really great parody called Goodbye, Mr. Bunting,
uh-huh.
in which students, you know, there's the scene at the end where they're standing on the desks child is decapitated with a ceiling fan.
Yes.
So I'll make sure to...
Mr. Bunting, we didn't want you to get fired. They made us sign that paper.
Sit down, Mr. Dalton.
It's okay, Thomas. It's okay. Leave Mr. Bunting right now.
I sing my song for all to hear.
Sit down this instant.
I sing my song for all to hear.
I will have you both expelled if you do not sit down immediately. Mr. Bunting,
I sing
please.
My song for all to hear.
I sing my song for all to hear. I sing my song.
I went back and watched that, and it was really pretty
That's
funny.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Well, it's also interesting that I think that even though it's a movie set in 1959, it really does have the values of 1989.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, when you were talking about the Ivy Leagues and all of that stuff, it really did feel a little bit more like 1989's values.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, this was good. It was fun. Although, this is a dark movie. I mean, this was... Well, I think when most people think of Robin Williams, they think of a movie that's funny. And of course, there are just these brief moments of Robin Williams' funniness, but it's a really serious movie and it's dark.
I think that's another episode.
I think it is.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, thanks for joining us.
Yeah. So, you know, I think we always like to tease up what we're doing next time.
Yeah.
So you want to share.
So if you want to do a little homework.
Yeah.
We'll tease it.
Yeah. It's going to be
Always. Always, we remember the Titans.
Starring, of course, Denzel Washington.
This is going to be good. I've not seen this one. I don't know how I've not
so
seen
good.
It.
So good. It's a great movie. It's a great movie.
Well, great. So if you want to jump ahead, you
Watch
can do
it.
Your homework.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks. This was Carla.
And Bill.
And we are...
Heads down.
Two thumbs up.